It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. UW researchers say bees in general are the most important pollinating animals in the world. We explore the lives of these hard workers and specifically bumblebees as they pollinate wildflowers and crops. Call in with questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Holly Petrillo is here, forestry professor at UW Stevens Point. Holly, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you have your students looking for bumblebees at different sites in central Wisconsin. What is the purpose of documenting where bumblebees can be found?
Well, one of the basic reasons why we're doing this is just to get a baseline of information, which bumblebees are in central Wisconsin and where, you know, how many there are, where they're found, what resources they're using. There's not very much information out there. And so kind of the most important thing before we figure out, you know, what to do and what people can do to get involved is to know where we're at with bumblebee populations.
I wonder, why isn't there a baseline of information on how bumblebees are doing in the central part of the state?
Well, it's not just in the central part. It's really, throughout Wisconsin and in many states, there just isn't a lot of information available. I think when people think about bees, we focus a lot on honeybees, and we know a lot of information about honeybees because they do pollinate a lot of our commercial crops. And so there's a lot of monitoring that goes along with honeybee populations, but our native bees, which include bumblebees, there's just not as much information about. And they're not pests. You know, pests get a lot of attention, and they're not pests. They're important, obviously, but our kind of time and efforts usually get funneled to things that are, say, economically important, like honeybees, or things that are causing damage. And so bumblebees and other native bees don't fall into that category. And so historically, they've just been a bit neglected.
And the students are contributing to the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade, which is a DNR effort. Can you tell us about this, the Bumblebee Brigade?
Sure. Yeah, this is a really phenomenal project that the DNR has taken on. And like you said, the students wanted to have a meaningful research project. There's already this statewide program going on. The DNR manages it, but it is a citizen science project where anyone can contribute data if you're interested in monitoring for bumblebees. You know, it's something anyone can participate in. But the objectives of the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade are really, again, what I was saying, developing this baseline of information, maps of where our native bumblebees are found throughout the state, and really focusing in on the resources they're using. So which plants, and that includes herbaceous plants, trees, shrubs, you know, which plants they're using, other kind of habitat. Most of our bumblebees and other native bees are ground nesters. And so trying to figure out where their nesting sites are. And so all of that information will help us preserve them better. So knowing what types of habitats they need, what types of plants they need, can help us figure out what we can do to increase their populations.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about pollinators, specifically bumblebees, with UW Stevens Point forestry professor Holly Petrillo. You can join in with your questions along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You know, as you get this baseline of information through the Bumblebee Brigade and other projects you have going on, Holly, how does that intersect with climate change and how climate change is affecting these pollinators like bumblebees?
That's a great question. I think part of it has to do when different flowers are in bloom and when bumblebees may be needing resources, especially in the springtime. So that's a crucial time for really any, all of our insect populations and plants, as we say, have earlier bloom times than we often are going to see insects emerging earlier in the spring as well. And so resources may change over time, or the plants that that bumblebees and other bees have access to will likely change over time. And that kind of goes also to the end of, on the other end of the spectrum, when we're talking about fall resources as well. So how long plants are available for nectar and for pollen, and how insects are using those resources. And it's not just those kind of spring and fall changing, but that's where we've been seeing the most dramatic changes in climate in the Great Lakes region anyway.
And certainly the impact on rainfall amounts can have such an impact on the vegetation and what the offerings are for pollinators.
Right, absolutely. And it isn't the same everywhere. Right? Mm-hmm. So some areas are becoming much drier, some becoming much wetter. And so that is changing the dynamics of plants and what's growing in those areas. And then thinking about, again, a lot of our native pollinators are, or native bees in particular, are ground nesters. And so thinking about where their habitat may be available. If areas are becoming more wet, then they may look, you know, have to change and go to drier ground. So they may just completely change where their habitat availability is.
It goes back to that location monitoring. And I understand you operate a small organic farm and have a variety of fruit trees. How do your crops benefit from pollinators?
Well, we need the pollinators so that we get fruit. And so that's one of the amazing things about the relationship between insects and plants is almost all of the food crops that we enjoy, or I would say fruit and nut crops, they need insect pollinators. I mean, unless we want to go around and hand pollinate everything, we need the insects to pollinate our plants to provide all of the fruits that we love. And that, so I think a lot of times when we think about habitat for bees, we may be thinking about herbaceous plants, and those are certainly important, but our flowering trees and shrubs require insect pollinators as well. So thinking about all of the apples, cherries, blueberries, plums, all of our favorite summer fruits require pollination right now in the spring from insects.
How do you feel about, like, bumblebees can be rented or purchased for crop pollination, you know, farmers contracting with beekeepers to truck in bees to ensure their crops are well pollinated? What do you think about that practice?
Sure. So those are managed honeybee colonies. So honeybees are not native, but they are really important for agricultural production. And there is some competition that occurs between honeybees and our native bees for food resources. But to be honest, I think at the scale at which we are now practicing agriculture, we don't have enough habitat for our native bees to do all of that pollination. So, I mean, a lot of it just comes down to the way that we practice agriculture and require, you know, a lot of pollination of one crop all at one time, you know, in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I would love it if we had more crop diversity and didn't need to be, you know, trucking bees all over. But I think at the current state of agriculture, we really need those honeybees. Otherwise, we won't get the level of fruit and nut production that we seek.
UW-Stevens Point Forestry Professor Holly Petrillo helping us to understand the critical work of pollinators and how we can improve their habitats. Call in with questions along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We learn what it means to provide early season food for pollinators and how to view our green spaces from their perspective. As the climate crisis and habitat loss threaten a variety of pollinators, you can be part of this conversation. Call in with questions, thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Holly Petrillo, a professor of forestry at UW Stevens Point. Let's bring in Jeff in Delafield. Jeff, hi.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. One of the things we see with modern agribusiness is to remove vegetation and tree lines in between fields, or separating tracts of land from one owner to another. It's just that's being removed all over the place. You see it all over the state. How is that impacting bee populations?
Jeff, thank you. Holly, do you have insights there?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. That does directly impact any kind of pollinator habitat or insect habitat. I think as we slowly increase our agricultural production, any loss of just kind of wild spaces, you may not think wild space next to a large agricultural field, but any native plants that are going to be available will contrast with the fields of just one type of plant and provides important habitat. And especially thinking not just about the plants that are there, but the nesting habitat that's in or on the ground next to those agricultural fields. And so if farmers can leave those buffers, leave those, as natural as you can call that, in between the fields, we already have protections for riparian areas, but if we could treat all of our kind of farm buffers that way, leaving some kind of refuge for any kind of animal, really, but with focusing on pollinators, that really makes a big difference.
Trees,
as we expand agriculture, we just lose habitat.
I was going to say these tree barriers as well, not just marking where land stops and starts, but I would imagine they're also wind breaks and help keep soil in place.
Absolutely, there are so many benefits for having these buffers. Having trees and, a mix of trees and shrubs and herbaceous plants in those buffers, the more diversity you can have, the better. And right, just like you're saying, not just having pollinator resources, but soil conservation is really important. And again, just providing that nesting space in addition to the plants there, something to buffer so that and the windbreak as well. I mean, there's, endless benefits.
Jeff, thank you so much for the call. We also, Holly, heard from Jim in Cedarburg, emailed with saying Nomome is great, but Jim is saying that it is also important to leave leaf litter undisturbed, and says leaf litter is critical for bird fodder. What can you tell us there?
Sure. Yeah, I think No Mow May is a great way to to get people interested. It's very visual. It's something that's easy. I mean, maybe one of the easiest things you can do is to not do something, right? Don't mow in May. It is hopefully a hook to get people interested in going further, if that makes sense. Absolutely. The leaf litter serves as nesting habitat for a lot of our native bees. And I mean, we think about insects as beneficial, for example, for pollination, but yeah, a lot of birds are insectivores, and they require insects for their food resources. And so anyone that's really interested in bees, birds should also be interested in bees and other insects and providing habitat, because a lot of our birds depend on insects, and they're creating nests right now and feeding their young, and they need insects for their food sources.
So you know, the timing here, not mowing a lawn for a relatively short period of time can result in more mowing later, which can kill or displace insects and animals, as you've been talking about. But are there any better alternatives to putting off mowing yards?
Well, I think that there's, I mean, not mowing in the springtime when, especially if we're focusing back on bumblebees, they're emerging, they're foraging, they need, all insects really need that energy right away in mm-hmm. the spring when they are laying eggs and starting to feed young. But thinking about, again, kind of moving forward, having habitat, so thinking about our lawns, I mean, there's millions and millions of acres in the U.S., for example, of just lawn. And if we converted even just a fraction of that to more native habitat, then we would, you know, make a significant impact on conservation of insect habitat, pollinator habitat. And so it can morph into something that's just passive, not mowing, but still having that lawn structure. There's a really great program being piloted in the city of Stevens Point here in central Wisconsin, where they're encouraging and supporting families to totally change their lawn from grass, which is not utilized by insects, to more native habitats. And so, again, going that extra step and saying, okay, first, maybe I just won't mow and be comfortable with that. But yeah, that becomes kind of unruly, right? And a lot of people, I get a lot of complaints like, oh, well, then June, it's so hard to mow. So why don't we just not mow then also? And
keep
but
it going.
Instead of still having that grass, instead of it looking crazy, because a lot of people don't like crazy looking, right? Like unkept areas. Uh-huh. Why don't we transform those spaces to provide habitat and have, you know, beautiful flowers at the same time? And so we can serve a lot of different purposes that way.
We have UW Stevens Point Forestry Professor Holly Petrillo. You can join in on Pollinators 800-642-1234. Holly, to that point, there are these bee lawns incorporating Dutch white clover, creeping thyme. You know, these plants have the flowers that bees appreciate. How difficult is establishing and maintaining a bee lawn?
I think the challenge is the establishment and just getting rid of the sod and you know, I think establishment, once you have that sod layer removed, I mean, you kind of have just an open space and the establishment is easier after mm-hmm. that. So I think that initial removal of the sod, and there's lots of amazing, you know, landscape professionals and extension folks that can help in terms of the how and also on that physical doing. But once those plants are planted, especially if you're focusing on perennials, they will perpetuate themselves. And so it really would just be every year kind of trying to figure out, maybe start small. You know, I mean, when you're thinking about a lawn, or I mean, I say the same thing when I talk to people about farming, start small. Start with an area that you can handle and then just do a little bit more every year.
Grow from there, yes.
Yeah. But really, then thinking, yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Really quickly here, Linda in Appleton wants to know your opinion on rain gardens. Does this help pollinators? Should cities incentivize rain gardens? What is the impact?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, any wild or, you know, think about semi-wild spaces, in an urban area provides really critical habitat. So whether you call it, I mean, rain gardens are really great because they do provide habitat for pollinators. They also try to deal with some of the, you know, runoff and water issues that urban areas may have. So again, serving multiple purposes. Anything that we can do in our landscape that's concrete and lawn to provide refuge for insects in those areas actually does make a huge difference. Mm. And so the more people that participate, the more habitat is going to be available.
Holly, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a lot of fun.
Holly Petrillo is a forestry professor at UW-Stevens Point. Find a link to the Wisconsin Bumblebee Brigade at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.